Do you want me to hum the theme song, Greg?
Yeah, you can hum the theme song if you like, Eric. Welcome back, everyone, to the Box Office Battles podcast with Greg and Eric.
Special night tonight. Music, Greg?
What? Who?
Where's our music? Are you hearing music?
I hear music.
Am I the only one? I don't hear any music.
Well, that is just wrong.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's fine.
I don't know. I could jack it up, but...
Well, I don't...
Yeah, I hear it.
Okay, listen.
It should be on the podcast.
I'm not here to argue with you about what you do and don't hear.
It's all good.
I'm here to argue with you about these shitty movies.
Yeah, let's do that. We are having a special night tonight. It is the final four of the worst bad movies ever. Until we do this again, when we decide to have another category. Because what we found out in this category is that there's so many bad movies out there, and we are gluttons for punishment. So, and we were punished. I'm going to say that. So Kriplius is one of our regulars is on here, and he said he did not hear music either or see you guys. Well, do you see us now? Yeah, there you are, he says. So we are here. I don't know what the technical difficulty was on the music intro. I can hear it. It's on my soundboard. Who knows with technologies these days? Technology. Am I right?
We'll fix it in post, and we'll put a bed down, and we'll talk over it, and everything's fine. These are all industry terms. I don't want to confuse everybody. You have to kind of be deep into this stuff.
So
what that stuff is.
So we've been through a lot on this category. I think when we started doing this podcast a few months ago, it was the idea of, you know, good movies. And then we decided, well, what were the worst movies or the bad movies? We had like a little kind of, I think we kind of messed up the whole idea of it and just turned into doing bad movies. And it was excruciating. I'm not going to lie.
The hard part is over. Thankfully, now nothing left but the talking about movies we already watched. So over the last week, I didn't have to watch any more bad movies. No. Making me feel all kinds of ways and questioning everything I thought I knew about, I don't know, just like not giving a shit about your own artistry, about putting things into the world that deep down you have to know shouldn't be out there, but for whatever reason you do it anyway. I don't know. A lot of questionable decisions, not the least of which our decision to watch all of these movies. But our long national nightmare, Greg, is almost over. So
it I'm is. Happy
that we get to meet tonight.
It is. And I'm glad we got a chance to do it, even though it was painful. It showed us. Actually, we had our biggest viewership on YouTube over this past week. 150 viewers in just a few days. I think our high before that was around 57, 58. So somebody's enjoying the bad movies and the punishment we're putting us through. So I think we're going to do this again down the road and eventually have a champion of champions of the worst movies ever.
Oh, yeah. Like SummerSlam.
Exactly.
Or, I don't know.
Or Royal Rumble, whatever it is.
Royal Rumble. I think that's what I meant.
But yeah, so I enjoyed it, but I didn't. And if that's a weird thing to say, is that I enjoyed talking about them with you and having that mutual suffering with ourselves and the audience.
There's a term for this, Greg. Trauma bonding. Is that what it is? Is what we did.
That sounds
and
good.
Yeah, who better to go on this type of journey with than you? Someone who's even keeled and not going to get too high and not going to get too low, and can just kind of talk me through this stuff and when I'm at my worst. So I appreciate you doing that.
Well, when we started this podcast, you know, you were doing Jericho's to the Movies and I was guesting on there occasionally, and we discussed it that you hadn't seen a lot of the movies. So a lot of times you were on Jericho's to the Movies, you saw things for the first time. So you're kind of like our guinea pig on this show. We get to just throw things at you and see how you react. Now this one, a lot of these bad movies I had not seen, so it was painful for me to get through because I'm used to watching at least halfway decent movies. I watch a lot of bad movies for fun, but these were beyond bad. Now, before we get into where we are in the bracket, we want to introduce a special guest that we've got with us in the studio. He's going to help us tonight kind of decide the final four and who the eventual winner is. We're going to discuss these films and kind of get to our worst bad movie ever. He's a personal friend of mine. He goes back to when We were both Air Force buddies stationed together at Lakin Heath, England. We actually did radio together for a little bit over a year. We had a show that was fairly popular in the Lakin Heath, Mildenhall area called the Friday Night Buzz with Greg and Alan and Dr. K. So we want to bring him on. Matt Kozman, or affectionately known as Dr. K. So let's bring him in there. How you doing? I don't have like the applause thing, but even
so. I know. Crickets will work. We can applaud. There we go.
Even so, my soundbar doesn't seem to be working, so it wouldn't matter at all. I'd just be pressing yeah. buttons and nobody would hear anything but me.
But I like the whole, like, I'm good. I like the whole German noir entrance where it was very quiet. It was just silent. It just, you know, internal thoughts. I was like, this is deep. This is really deep.
Now, Matt or Dr. K, he was affectionately known on the radio. We did the Friday Night Buzz together on Zach FM in Mildenhall, oh, yeah. Lakin Heath area, Cambridge area, when we were stationed there. And we had a great time. We had a lot of good times because our show ran on Friday night from 8 to midnight. So we could pretty much do whatever we wanted. We would treat ourselves to a fridge full of beers. We had the pubs were packed and going on, so we would open up the window and yell at people on the street, and then afterwards go to the pubs and hang out with people. It was just a good environment. It was a lot of fun, I think, had. And it was freedom. It was fun. We had to fight with the program manager, the station manager, because we would stray from the format quite a bit because we wanted to turn it into a Friday night morning show. And that's kind of what we accomplished. And what was great was we would be going around town, going around the base, and we'd hear people quoting our bits. And we would be standing there. They wouldn't even know that we were there. So that was kind of a good compliment. So it's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. And these are terrible movies. So I've been following, and this list, I'm kind of glad Waterworld didn't make it in because I'm a Kevin Costner fan. So when The Room beat it out, I was like, good.
Yeah, the Waterworld was the best of these eight movies times a billion. Easily. I mean, it shouldn't have been on the list. And The Room, because Greg kind of touched on it a little bit when I floated the idea of doing this one. I said to him, let's do, like, we did the eight best movies. Let's do the eight worst movies. Right. Well, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. And to me, it was more about things like Battlefield Earth, Waterworld, that were like major studio films, big budget, and underperformed compared to some of Greg's choices, Manos, Hands of Fate, and like these types of things that were made by amateurs that they weren't big budget movies. They were made by amateurs. They weren't supported by a studio. So Waterworld, by far the best of these, I guess. Going back a little bit to the casual observer, Greg, the story about you and Dr. K having a radio show together is a little odd because, as our listeners already know, you're significantly older than I am. You appear to be about 35 years older than Dr. K. And so just trying to figure out, like, were you reaching forced retirement age and had to bring on a cadet to, like, take your spot? Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Actually, we worked in the hospital together, and I had been on the air for a couple of years in England. And I had tried several radio partners, but the chemistry was usually not present. It was okay, and so a lot of times I was just, but I enjoyed doing radio, like this podcast, with somebody that I can bounce stuff off of. And we were on a bunch of committees together. And yes, he was younger than he's younger than I am.
Significantly.
So we were on a few committees in the hospital together, and we did a holiday party. And it was the best holiday party ever. We decided to do like a recreation of a Christmas party, like a TV special.
Like Dean Martin's Christmas, or like TV show, basically. Right.
So we would have where people knocked on the door and another person come in, and I was playing Dean Martin, and Matt played every single other character.
A lot.
And so he would leave and come out dressed as Anne Margaret or Bing Crosby, and we would do these musical numbers, and they were just comedic takes on it. People loved it. We had such a good time. I was like, all right, I can do radio with this guy. We can do it together. So that's when we started to meld and do that. We did that for about a year, and then I got – sad thing was I had to leave, went to Portugal. Yeah. I continued to do radio there, but it wasn't quite the same. So we had a good time. And so we've stayed friends ever since. I'd love to do it one day down the road again. But yeah, life changes and things go on. And now we've got this great podcast.
I know.
Very happy to be doing it. We're kind of like gaining steam right now. And nothing it like says steam like a steaming pile of turds like these movies were. And that's basically what we've been dealing with. If you look at Eric's bracket and my bracket, he has kind of, like you said, the ones that people sunk money into were turds. Mine were just really shitty movies.
They were crappy from the beginning. Yeah.
If Matt comes on and is your homer and he votes your way every single time, then the next time we do this, I'm going to have like Eller or Greer come on.
They
can be the type. Those are my kids, Matt, or two of them anyway. Right. And so I just want to be, my spidey senses are tingling a little bit. So no, I'm bringing him in.
Greg and I, we disagree on things and it's okay. We both have thick skin.
Yeah.
My, funny enough, my son is a film director and I make him watch these films. Like the crappiest films. And he's like, Dad, why do I have to watch this? I'm like, because this is what we need to prevent. This is like a public service announcement for me to you. It's okay to suck. Like you said, like some of Greg's movies, they were their first try. They suck unintentionally. But if you're good and you suck, or you get up there and you get some wins under your belt, and then you make a crap film, you're a scourge on mankind. So I don't want that to happen to my bloodline. So I try to stay.
It's really well put.
Yeah,
That's a threshold that Greg and I talked about a lot. It's okay to do less with less, but it is not okay to do less with more.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how we got to it. Now let's start with my side of the bracket. These are the final four and the first round. We're just basically what we've been doing in these final four, since we've already broken the film down, kind of compare and contrast out like which one is the worst turd usually is which one's the better. This one is which is the worst. And we covered both of these films. And honestly, when we covered them against their opponents, we clearly hated both of these films more than the opponents. We actually enjoyed Manos and Plan 9 much better than these two. And honestly, between the two of us, these were both really painful watches. So when you're talking about Mac and Me, and Tiptoes, there, one's a family film, one is trying to take itself as a serious drama, and neither one function on any level that they're trying to achieve. What are your best memories of these two turds, Eric?
Well, okay, I mean, I just remember when we were talking about Mac and Me, that just nothing fucking happens like at all, and the things that do happen are so inexplicably fucking stupid. Like, this is by far of the eight films the stupidest. This and Catwoman are the stupidest movies we watched, for sure.
Yeah.
And
easily.
I mean, it, and that's without even taking in like the context of it, which is it's a glorified advertisement for Coca-Cola and for McDonald's. Although I've seen more creativity in a 30-minute McDonald's or a 30-second McDonald's commercial than I have in this hour and a half piece of shit. All of the special effects were really, really bad. And I remember us, Greg, talking at the time, like, when you see that, you know, because you can have really high hopes for what it is you're trying to accomplish. But like, when you see it, like, it's a sunk cost fallacy. You've got to pivot from that and do a practical effect or have it kind of happen off camera, because leaving this shit in, it was hard to take any of it seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that was the other thing, Greg, was this was after E.T. had come out. You had a blueprint for what a movie like this could be. And instead of, like, all you had to do was take that and be like, 10% better, or even 10% worse would have been fine. It was handed to you, and instead they just fucking blew it. And Matt, when I was talking to my partner Kelsey about all the movies we were doing for this, I was naming off some of them, and she either hadn't heard of them or hadn't seen them. When I got to Mac and Me, it was like that record scratching sound in movies. Oh. As she was like, now, wait a second. That movie is awesome. We watched that movie growing up. I'm significantly older than Kelsey is by 10 years. So this, like, this was a movie that her and her sisters watched growing up. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't include it. Greg included it in the list.
Right.
We'll watch it. She still defends it. Like, after we watched it, she's like, he's so cute. That movie was cute.
That's like when you're on a date with a girl and she's like, you know, I mean, what's your favorite, Dark Crystal or Labyrinth? And I'm like, I got to go. But if I was in a relationship that long and it was like, Mac and Me's my jam, I'd be like, we got to go to counseling, I think.
It was wild. I mean,
you learned something new about your partner.
And then, she stood by it after we watched it.
She doubled down.
I mean, own it, I guess. Own it.
I just like the idea of the movie ending and her looking at you and going, all right, now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Now you can give Greg a piece of your mind. See? Because you just watched a movie.
Now,
you know,
now you're on my side.
I don't know, Greg. I mean, that's what I recall the negatives be. Can you recall anything about that conversation that we thought this movie had? Oh, she popped in. Y'all,
we're causing marital disputes. Sorry, Kelsey.
The first and only time I know of her listening or watching the show live.
When Mac and Me is getting crap, because
her little ears perked up and she was like, now wait a second, I'm not going to let him go in there.
Yeah.
Talk shit. But I mean, do you remember anything redeeming from this, Greg, at all, besides the Paul Rudd bit?
The dance battle at the McDonald's for me.
Yeah.
That was with the Washington Redskins and Ronald McDonald. It was like Breakin' does Romper Room. It was that crazy. That one to me was like, if you have to watch the film, just watch the scene and you'll get enough out of it. It was an atrocious scene, but you can't help but laugh at it. That Mac is in the teddy bear dancing on the top of the
that right there is one of the redeeming, like, for me, that and the kid getting launched off the cliff are like, those are the two parts of the movie where I was like, okay, if I was high, this probably would make me giggle like a lot, these two scenes, but everything else, it's a lot of McDonald's.
I can't
ad placement.
I can't afford drugs anymore, so that didn't have that
damn supply chain issues.
Can you guys put up the GoFundMe link for Eric's?
For and you know, they started putting fentanyl in everything. And
it's
you can't even just party anymore without worrying if you're
drunk. Make Eric high again.
I don't know that would have helped. Like, it helped when I watched Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yeah,
for the first time high, and you go, okay, well, it kind of is starting to come together. I'm not sure it would have helped in this.
No, you would have just, like, got suicidal or scared or, like,
but Greg, what was it? There was some musical thing about that movie. Oh, Bobby Caldwell has a song, like, the late, great Bobby Caldwell, the singer of What You Won't Do for Love, and one of the best blue-eyed soul songs ever. Like, he didn't deserve that. I was very offended.
Friend or something,
or you know, his agent calls and goes, some
I can't afford drugs anymore, I need help. Okay, let me help you there.
So
let's do one more movie.
I was very offended on Bobby Caldwell's behalf. I'm sure his agent just called him. It's like, we've got some people in Hollywood doing like E.T. meets product placement, are you in? And he's like, God damn it. Every time, everything you pull up here is more silly than the thing before it.
It's great.
It is.
Oh, they're just bad. Yeah.
If E.T. was addicted to Coca-Cola? That would be a great movie, somebody thought.
It was actually, the whole movie is. He's addicted to Coke. But
he's a Coke. He's a Coke. That's the undertone.
He's into young kids, paralyzed kids. And
yeah, which is
Yeah, it's the costumes are bad enough because it's like they just spent money on just something to pull over. There's no animation. It's not even like Yoda. And Yoda came out way before it. You could have done any type of puppetry, and it's just the same puckered,
Okay, do you think that limitation, though, is the reason that they communicate in a series of whistles? Because they realized early on
that's all they could do.
They didn't have the...
It's exactly right.
That's probably what it is. They're like, I can't make this thing do anything else.
Okay, all right. I kind of thought it was just a creative choice, but okay. I mean, at least then you pivoted towards, okay, the mouths don't move, so they either speak in grunts or in this case,
grunts whistles. Was Battlefield Earth, so we'll get to
it
that
was...
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, I mean, that one was wild, but I mean, even though we moved it through, which one was this up against? It was Mac and Me versus what?
That was Plan 9, which was much, much better. Plan 9 is a horrible
movie. Oh, yeah, we liked
movie.
Plan 9.
Yeah, it was so easy to decide because Plan 9, as bad as it is, the time goes by quick. You have a good laugh.
There's a charm to it.
Matt makes a great point. This one, if I went and seen it back in my high school days with the, smoke a joint before you go in and watch it with a bunch of people. Like we used to do in the 80s, we'd go see heavy metal or Rocky Horror and everybody would, party in the parking lot. Then we'd go into midnight movies. I'd have a good time. Probably I would have a good time with any of these movies because they're just shitty.
Yeah.
But if I'm straight watching it, like at my age now, it was grueling. Like I said, several of these, I had to take breaks because it was like, I can't watch it.
And you're a movie guy. Yeah, like Greg is a guy that doesn't move during a movie. So if he's taking breaks.
Yeah. It's
just saying something. That's...
It would be like just getting up and going, all right, I've had enough. I've just got to walk away.
I'm done.
And it just was painful. So yeah, this one was equally as pathetic as its counterpart in Tiptoes, which is disappointing from an aspect of a film. So if we're comparing these two, you've got a film that was clearly set up for product placement, corporate tie-in, family-oriented film. All right, so we have a lot of shitty ones of those. How many shitty movies do we have with Gary Oldman and Matthew McConaughey? I mean...
It's a small list.
This is what's so surprising about Tiptoes is the Gary Oldman, Matthew McConaughey, Patricia Arquette, Kate Beckinsale, Peter Dinklage, official selection of the Sundance Film Festival. Could you imagine being at Sundance when this turd came across the
screen? Man, I wish we had fly on the wall footage of the audience at Sundance, which is also a bunch of people who love the smell of their own fucking farts all being all movie
narcissistic
and like to bring the and okay so like you man this movie was kind of like it had to have been created in the vein of like Rain Man or What's Eating Gilbert Grape or there was some other I Am Sam like there are several movies out there where you
just Gary Oldman
and guys in their scooters.
Gary Oldman and his little bike.
Now, I do have to say that out of all the people in this film, Gary Oldman did pull his weight the most in becoming that guy. Like
he put every effort into it. I will give you that.
He did. He was not Gary Oldman anymore.
All he did was put shoes on his knees, dudes. Like that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the best.
Dorf on Golf did that bit way better.
And it's almost steal. It's like Alf without the outfit. It was kind of like you stole this bit from someone else. But this wasn't even like in Matthew McConaughey's pre-high. This was in rom-com.
Yeah.
Like he golden
was
era.
How to Lose
like
a Guy.
Ghost of Girlfriend's Past.
How to Lose a Guy.
Yeah, he 10 was doing, days. Yeah. I mean, this guy was murdering it. I mean, granted, all mediocre romance movies, but they were all crushing at the box office. You add one of the greatest actors of all time, Gary Oldman, you make him Danny DeVito with AIDS, and now you've destroyed. I don't want to know whose idea that was to be like, let's make him pathetic.
I think it was Gary Oldman's, where he kind of championed
this
film.
I got an idea.
Yeah. And he,
That's right. This was one of his like passion projects.
Exactly. And, yeah. And so that's how he got everybody on board. And you know, like we saw the, Two Bears, One Cave with Bert Kreischer, talking about this movie. They had Kip McConaughey in there watching the trailer. I'm not going to show that clip because it got us kicked off of Facebook the last time.
Did it?
I got a cease and desist. Believe it or not, our little podcast got a cease and desist from the Two Bears, One Cave for showing a clip of theirs during our live stream.
Come on, Bert.
Remember when we got kicked off?
Dude.
Remember when you said, dude, we just got kicked off of Facebook right in the middle of a live stream. That's what happened. Was we were
all I know is I Googled Two Bears filling one cave and it was like crazy.
It's crazy.
Now I kept watching because I was like, well, that's the thing about bear attacks.
I'm a nature guy.
When it's gonna happen.
And I was Bert's gotta come on eventually.
Yeah, I was like, I don't even really know what these guys look like. So maybe they always wear leather or whatever. But it was fine. I did come, so that was in any event, I think they thought they were doing some like, you know, like for the greater good, this higher calling. Yeah. And we're going to shine a light on a, it looks like she's getting in the ass.
Come on, Matt.
And that's it's hard to say because like, is that a midget or is that a,
exactly.
It's not midget. What is it?
He says dwarf in the movie. Cause
he does.
Kate Beckinsale says midget and he corrects her and says it's little person or dwarf or whatever.
So we're going to shine a light and we're leave it to us to shine a light on an often unseen part of society where full-size adult men and their partners have to worry about the product of their sex being a dwarf.
Yeah.
It was a bridge too far. It was like they sat down with all of the things. I mean, the kid in Mac and Me that had spina bifida was more convincing as a
because he actually
as a cripple
he actually had spina bifida.
Oh no. Shit. Well, the kid was so a
this
natural
was, this was appropriation. This was appropriation where they could have cast a small person and they cast Gary Oldman. So
and instead of having Peter Dinklage, who had already been, or who's the other guy, Willow,
Willow, what's that dude's name? I can't remember. I'll remember later.
He was Warwick Davis. Warwick Davis.
Warwick Davis.
That's not at least two working Hollywood actor dwarves with at least reputation enough to play a lead role in this. And Greg and I have talked before on the show about like acting is acting for a reason. And so you don't have to match up with all of the qualities and all of the traits of the person you're playing. And there are times, and I think it's a noble endeavor to open up roles to, you know, underserved communities or people who may otherwise not have had a chance to be, you know, in roles like that. But you can't go down the list and go, well, I'm shooting a movie about a Portuguese amputee that only has one eye and I have to go find a Portuguese actor with one eye.
One eye.
You can't do that. But it's a bold choice, guys, to have an adult man put shoes on his knees and try to tell me that's
and
a dwarf.
Walk around. It's almost like blackface. It's that and offensive. It's like, you're not tricking us. Like, I know like, this guy.
Tell me he's not just sitting on his legs.
Yeah, that's like Muppet legs.
It's Muppet.
Know, those are Kermit the Frog's legs. They just repurposed them.
And this still, he's literally in the couch. Standing up, and they've got fake legs dangling. And when you see
with
it on
a little
camera,
wire moving,
like Jim Henson's behind there. But it when you see it on camera, when you see the film, it's so surreal. You can't believe that they actually thought this was going to be good.
Was it good? Right.
And you were pointing out things. It's like, you know, the Portuguese amputee, but we had a spate of movies in the 90s that they were Oscar winning because of, like, you know, I Am Sam, you know, Rain Man, these films with, they had people with disabilities. You had, what was the one, Radio with Cuba Gooding. So they were like trying to tap an untapped market with let's do dwarves. And so I get the idea, and Peter Dinklage still defends the film, But the idea behind it is admirable. The execution is completely wrong. It doesn't work on any level.
Do you think it had anything to do with timing? Because you remember this is in the days of the most insensitive bro movies, like Van Wilder, right? You know, Old School comes not long after that. So this was kind of in the time when sensitivity was not a thing. Like we were throwing out Harold and Kumar and stuff, and they're like, "Oh, here, feel good movie." I'm like, "Enjoy this. Oh, that's not going to hit right now, man. We're doing midget stuff.
It would have hit better if they leaned into it, like the movies you're talking about, where you just make it a comedy. But like, I think,
but have a message baked into it, like, you know,
and that's nice fine. To, yeah, you know, and that way I wouldn't feel. It's like they tried to hit me over the head with this, like with a hammer, but they just kept missing because I'm not falling for it. No. And I don't, I just remember us feeling like this was just the wildest, weirdest thing.
Right.
Strange. Matthew McConaughey's character is like the fucking worst.
Oh, he's evil.
Constantly like losing his motherfucking mind for no reason. Yep. Kate Beckinsale's character, whatever her name was, she's just trying to blow him early in the movie. He can't have it. She's having a wants to know if their son might be a dwarf. He loses his mind. They're Do you just have
I love how you just have these on tap. I'm always ready. Oh my god.
With the images to match the comments. But
like he was unhinged through the whole thing.
Oh, when he loses it when they think that the baby just might be a dwarf and he comes from a family of dwarves.
It doesn't And he match. Spends the whole interacting with the little people. And being kind of an advocate for their well-being and their equal treatment and all of these things. And he acts like it is no big deal. He shows up to the little person convention and he's one of the few full-size people besides David Alan Greer.
Oh yeah, who is a treat. David Alan Greer's character is the only thing I really loved about this film.
David Alan
Greer, when he gets caught with the little person in the conservatory, it's just one of the funniest scenes.
She's such a slut.
She is a big slut in that film, man. But it's one of these movies that, like we said, it's where they going for Oscar bait, and it's so schmaltzy that it doesn't work. But let's not even go there. It's just the plot itself. Where does it build to? There's
Lindsay as hell,
It's the fact that Gary Oldman's character is in love with his brother's, you know, fiance, eventually wife, and then they have a kid, and then it makes no sense. There's no emotional gravitas. There's nothing to kind of invest you in this film. And it's just a painful watch overall. Again, I can watch a drama if it's engrossing and you care about the characters. I didn't care about anybody. I just wanted it to be over, frankly.
Yeah.
And there was no, only laughs came from David Alan Greer. The rest of it was just the laughs from the ridiculousness.
French accent of Peter Dinklage is pretty up there. I don't know that there's been a worse French accent ever memorialized on film.
Yeah.
But like this? It was like Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah.
Like weird weirdness.
Yeah.
Patricia Arquette adds nothing. No. Their character arc adds nothing.
Yeah.
Or not
Patricia Arquette is such a great actress, and she was basically cuckolded into like this nothing role, you know, like disappear or
a nothing relationship in a nothing movie. Relationship.
Yeah,
and I think he was supposed to be the comedic, you know, like the drunken uncle shows up and says weird stuff, everybody laughs, but it just came off as like another weirdness. So it's just this weirdness, and it's like, oh, let's bring some more weirdness in. There was never any like delineation between the funny parts and the weird shit. It was just constant weird shit. So you were like, am I supposed to laugh at this part? Is it supposed to be funny? It didn't even make fun of itself or like, you know, try to break the fourth wall or even like, hey, look at us. We're making a dumb. It was like a legit, this is a rom-com that will teach you something.
Yeah, no.
That was confusing and weird.
I think, you know, I said something a little while ago where it was like, you know, back in my high school days, you know, you'd go see a movie, smoke a joint and enjoy just about any one of these. I'm going to say it right now. This one, if I went on midnight movies and even high, walked into a theater, I would be, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then immediately, who put this on? You know, it's just, like Mac and me, as bad as it is, and it is painful, it you can at least get some laughs out of it just because it's so bad that,
terrible,
that
right?
You can make fun of it. This one, if you make fun of it, it feels bad because there's so many good people in it. You're like, yeah. It doesn't even feel good to make fun of it. It's just,
no,
how dare you?
Opposite of that.
Yeah.
It deserves to be made fun of, and it deserves to be made fun of even more because you're professional people and you can't.
You screwed up.
Yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to do this to people. No. I expect this
blackballed
from amateurs. I expect this from up-and-coming artists. I expect this from independent, you know, head so far up their own ass film students. Yeah. No offense to your kid.
Nice.
And so, but I mean, you can throw a rock at USC Film School and find, you know, hit 100 kids with their heads up their own asses.
Yeah.
It's just like all that would be fine. Yeah. And if we watched the same exact movie with not two A-list headliners and a couple of A-minus list headliners in there, then maybe we have a different view of this. But between the forced emotion and the just abortion of a plot and cast it, I can't forgive it, and it feels like you should make fun of this one more than Mac and Me was just a kids movie and all they intended was for people to buy more Coke and eat more McDonald's, and it probably did that. Now the movie was made for cheap and it didn't make any money at the box office, but if the ROI on this thing is, you know, a 2% increase in Coca-Cola sales over the course of a year.
And I think they packaged the VHS for Mac and Me with like kids meals where you could get it for like $1.99 with the purchase of a kids meal.
Oh yeah.
So your
Ray Kroc was involved in the production of Mac and Me.
Kids meals skyrocket and the kids get a cheesy movie, you know, especially
and a terrible toy.
Young Kelsey gets a movie that she can love for the rest of her life for $1.99. Just because she got her kid's meal.
Surprised she didn't like run into the closet or send me to the storage unit.
But what if you didn't? What if you never watched it like 80% of the human population? And without context, getting that little character, that little Mac in your freaking McDonald's Happy Meal looks like a miniature alien sex toy. That would be kind of terrifying as a kid. You know what I mean? Like, why is his mouth pierced?
I want the full-sized one. That's...
This one's too small.
All right. And somehow they made it worse at the end of that movie when they put them all in like regular human clothes.
Yeah.
And they ended up being even more creepy than they were before that.
You
got a picture of this.
Yeah.
Who?
Yes.
This
was weird.
And of that?
If you'll recall, the family's going down the line kissing them on the mouth.
Oh, yeah. It's disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
No way. No way.
And they all drive off in a pink Cadillac. It's great. Well, I tell you what.
He ran for senator.
Yeah. I'm sure he did. And then with that mouth, can you imagine all the trouble he got into? So who knows?
Yeah, the throat goat.
he actually became Mitch McConnell. It's weird. This is an origin story.
With more movement. So I'm going to kick this off for the first of these two final four battles, and I'm just going to go straight out, and I don't even need to say why. We just said why. I'm going to vote Tiptoes as the worst of these two movies. I don't ever want to see it again. If I accidentally catch some Mac and Me through Paul Rudd or whatever, I'll watch Mac and Me, but I'm not going to watch Tiptoes ever again in my life. Except to tell people about it and curse them and make them watch it. So I'm voting Tiptoes. What say you guys? We'll start, Eric, what do you say?
It's Tiptoes by 1,000.
And if it wasn't unanimous, what would you say, Matt? What would you say?
I'm going to say Tiptoes because I think it's a terrible, terrible movie. Part of me wanted to go against the grain, but I can't. I Mac and Me, like you said, it became popularized because Paul Rudd tortured Conan O'Brien with it for years. So that's why I like Mac and yeah. me is watching the kid fly off that cliff. It brings me joy. So that's the only thing I can say. But Tiptoes, none of it brought me joy.
Like you know, 0%. Yeah, you know what? Paul Rudd probably has an excuse for Mac and me not making our finals. Because, yeah, that's one of the things that we enjoyed about it was that. But Tiptoes, there's nothing, anything redeeming. So here we are.
Nothing.
We're down to it. We've got two other movies to decide who meets Tiptoes in the finals. And these, to us, I mean, this is probably going to be harder. We discussed this when the bracket fell this way. The Room versus Battlefield Earth, I think these were almost equally excruciating films. I remember, and I talked about it when we did Battlefield Earth. It was our first one. We had Battlefield Earth versus Catwoman. And I remembered getting this from the video store and being kind of scolded for, why did you bring this into our house? Because it was like, we put it on and 20 minutes in, it was like, okay, that's got to go back to the video store. Because God forbid you get late fees on a movie like Battlefield Earth because you didn't turn it in time. That's insult to injury right there. And it was something I never watched all the way through, but I knew it was bad. So when we did it for the podcast, it was painful that I had to actually finish it, that I couldn't just stop it and move on. I would say the same thing about The Room was I'd seen The Disaster Artist. I had seen clips of The Room on YouTube that everybody gets to watch, the typical scenes that we showed last week when we did The Room. And I didn't think it would be as bad as that. I knew it would be bad, but I thought like people had told me, I was going to laugh. That
it
I was
going to be charmingly bad.
Yeah. I didn't find it funny at all, dude. I was like, no. This is just garbage, flat out garbage on the screen. And I understand why people will go see it and have a good time with friends. But when you're all by yourself, and you're putting this on, The Room on, for either of these films, The Room or Battlefield Earth. It is, Cripley says it's the two girls in one cup of movies. And now that's
it's not far off from true. Yeah. It's cringy.
So starting with, we can compare and contrast, but Battlefield Earth, again, one of these films that they sunk way too much money in it. It was a Scientology pet project for that John Travolta did for L. Ron Hubbard. It is trying to be Star Wars. And one of the things that stood out for me that Eric and I talked about was how in Star Wars, you get maybe 15 minutes of Darth Vader. And it works so well because it builds up how ominous he is. He comes in, he does something bad. And then you get to enjoy the heroes on their quest. In Battlefield Earth, John Travolta's villain is the star of the show. So you get saturated with his character to where you never get to find the main characters endearing or likable or anything about them because the screen is filled with John Travolta for 80% of the movie, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is he had wanted to do this for so long, this movie for so long, or project for so long, that in its original development, he saw himself as playing whatever the hero's name is, John Boy or whatever it is.
The lead
then,
man.
And he gets so old that he knew he couldn't play that part. But I do wonder then if this movie got made 15 years in the past, does the story and the directing get done differently where whatever character John Travolta's playing is the character that we're going to focus on. So had he been playing this guy, the story would have been around that. But since it was 15 years later and he's playing the bad guy, then the film's got to be about that. Yeah. It had to be. Every actor I saw in this, who's the Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pulled up his Wikipedia page. Is he a Scientologist? Because I just, in my mind, go,
no.
Who would voluntarily do this if they didn't already have that underlying reason to do it?
Yeah.
Right.
Or because, gambling debts or something. Like there's gotta be
Man, you can't even prepare yourself for how shitty this movie is. And I don't want I don't want the recency bias of having just watched The Room last week.
Yeah.
To interfere. I mean, this was one of the first ones we watched. That was like 8 weeks ago or so.
Yeah.
But it was shockingly bad. And it's not just shockingly bad like Tiptoes was.
It's a whole different
shockingly
level.
Bad because the good thing about sci-fi and superhero movies is that you're already given a 25% reduction in things having to make sense.
Right.
They don't have to. The audience is there specifically to suspend disbelief and be entertained and have fun. And the physics of it, the chemistry of it, the, you know, outlandishness of it often makes the movie better and not worse. And so you're given so much leeway, and they didn't do anything right in this. It's filmed the way, like, we know what film looks like, and we know what digital looks like.
No.
This looks like it was filmed on someone's phone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, like a VHS camera.
Like, and these green, the lettering that they use.
Oh, yeah,
like
X-Files lettering. Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how, for as big a budget as this was, how amateurish. And I think that's what Greg and I were so offended by, was, sure, the story doesn't make any sense. The acting, I mean, Jesus, okay, we'll get into John Travolta's acting here in a second. But, you know, the acting's bad. It's outlandish and outrageous, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And they're teaching people to fly Harrier jets in a week, and they're doing, you know, they're doing all this crazy stuff that you should be able to get away with.
Yep.
They don't. But just, this movie probably had the biggest budget out of all of them, besides maybe Waterworld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, talk about doing the least with the most. And I think that's you have to hold those movies to a higher standard. And I mean, fuck this piece of garbage.
Well, this, and I will tell you what, the two things that made it the worst for me, first of all, is the camera angles. That whole Dutch angles bullcrap, where it's like make you want to vomit type camera angles. And then the whole, it's almost like an interview with Larry King. Something will happen to the plot, and they're like, well, what does Turtle think about that? Let's go back to John Travolta. And then it's like, let's have you do some more story. What does Turtle think about that? And it was like, are we interviewing Turtle? Like, I don't give a shit what this guy thinks. Why does he have like a, well, now what are they doing? Well, now what are they doing? It was just it was like Skeletor ruining He-Man. And then I think its closeness to the premise of Planet of the Apes just pissed me off. Yeah. Because it was like, oh, we've enslaved humans for 1,000 years. Cool, we did that, right? We've already done that. You could have thrown Charlton Heston in here, and we could have made them monkeys, and then, you know,
the
movie
bit,
over.
You know what? They do kind of resemble the apes, and I'm not saying that because Forrest Whitaker's in there. That is not it. I'm just saying that.
Whoa!
It's the big forehead. It's the big forehead-like thing.
I just want to put that out there. I want to make that perfectly clear. That
what were you saying about him looking simian?
That's not... What I'm saying is their overall appearance.
Roseanne, tell us what you really...
You know, I never thought of that until now, but it is very Planet of the Apes-esque.
It's a ripoff to me. It's very much that same plot, just with the L. Ron Hubbard bullshit sprinkled in. And I was like, why? First of all, you're right. It pisses me off. This movie actually, like, viscerally, it angers me because of the level of talent. I think it's because John Travolta had so much control over editing, and plot, and story. That's what made it suck. I mean, I'm sure that every other John Travolta movie, with the exception of Wild Hogs, couldn't have sucked worse. But like if you touch any other movie with John Travolta having that much control,
That much
Grease
control. Staying Alive, I think, comes to mind as far as a John Travolta that's just god awful. The sequel to Saturday Night Fever. He's had some stinkers. You know, like I said, but like a lot of times it's when you see who, I think Sylvester Stallone directed that. and it was like a project between the two of them. Just keep John Travolta as an actor. Don't let him get involved with the production of these films, because it was just, it's just, yeah, it's an offensive piece of garbage compared to The Room, which, again, if you've seen The Disaster Artist, you know about Johnny Wiseau. Tommy Wiseau, sorry. I was going to mention that you said, what did you say, that Johnny, that the guy from Battlefield Earth was Johnny...
John Boy?
You're really close. Johnny Good Boy Tyler was the character that Barry Pepper played in Battlefield Earth.
That sounds like a boxer.
It does.
But, I mean, that guy's career died after this. If you think about Saving Private Ryan, that man was... I mean, he could have literally done any movie and you would have bought it.
Yeah.
And then he goes and does this piece of junk. And then he fades into non-existence. And now you just see him like pop up and... little places here and there, but it's always in some like 2 second role. And I'm like, I love that guy in Saving Private Ryan. He was the guy. Like he was one of the best actors.
He was Private Ryan?
No, he was
the sniper.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, he went to the point of like scarring his finger, like where that rifle actually hurts your finger. Like he had real scars on his hands. He went deep into the whole World War II sniper thing. So it was really awesome. And then you see him in this and you're like, oh, what the hell, dude? Like,
You can look up his IMDb, and he's done a few things, but not...
Yeah.
He was on a career trajectory that probably could have been a big one, but when you do something like this, say John Travolta survived it only because he was John Travolta, and honestly, you know, he had done, I think, what he did, Pulp Fiction prior to this.
Yeah.
So it's like you had your resurgence. John Travolta keeps having these career revivals after he decides to take his own career over and over again. But
he's kind of like a Nicolas Cage. Like that's why I see Forrest Whitaker. He can't fail because he's been in so much. It's like, half of those sucked, but I like this one about a butler.
Speaking of Nicolas Cage, eventually could be a category here on Box Office Battles. But my son and his friends back where he was in Oklahoma City, they would do a Nicolas Cage movie marathon, and I think they did like a Nicolas Cage roulette. Where it's like putting a bullet in a loaded gun and you just spit it. If it's a bad one, you took one to the noggin.
And hey, you guys vamp for a second. I'm going to go refill my coffee.
That sounds good. Can you do mine too?
Yeah. Another beer too while you're up.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. But you do that Nicolas Cage roulette. And I think that's a fun game to play where you could actually get one of those computer spinners and just put a list of Nicolas Cage movies on there. And you might get Long Legs, you might get Lucky, or you might get Mandy.
Dude, you might get Wanted, or whatever, the one where he could see into the future.
Yeah, what was it?
Like the same Next. Next. Yeah. But will say, like, so to Battlefield Earth, to the point of that was, I will say that it's kind of what was neat about it was, and unintentionally, is the humans were enslaved in the movie, and you were enslaved in the movie theater. So it was like, I feel John Boy's character. I'm stuck here.
Right.
Because, you know, my Kelsey wants to watch this. Nothing against you, Kelsey. I'm joking. But whoever that drug you to see this movie on the hopes that it was, like, it was worse than Swordfish. Like, you know how bad you gotta suck to be worse than Swordfish? Like, John Travolta went down a peg.
Yeah.
It was just great. I mean, I know he's a pilot, but you can't be the editor and the freaking writer and the director and the actor.
What a missed opportunity. The guy that's the pilot doesn't teach the cavemen how to fly Harrier jets. And I mean, that would have been
exactly. What an idiot.
So to go back to talking about The Room, the difference between it is you have Tommy Wiseau, and who it was a passion project. Like we had these other movies he had this unlimited amount of money. I think he sunk $6 million of his own money in it. And if you watch The Disaster Artist, you know the story behind it and how he was a failed actor that like was really over the top and drug his friend into making this movie. So yes, is it bad? Is it atrociously bad? And do I never, ever, ever want to see it again? Yes. But you're right. When we talk about comparison of the two is that John Travolta should have known better. Tommy Wiseau, they didn't know anything. Yeah, they didn't know.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have never had such an intense physical reaction to watching a movie as I did in The Room. It is the only one of these eight
yeah,
that I picked up my phone and was texting Greg and going, this is insane. And then 5 minutes later, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? It is impossible.
Is it going to get better?
It is. That's what I said last week was some movies when you're confused. Maybe if you watch enough of it, you'll start to get context and it'll make more sense. The more I watched this, the less it made any sense.
Right.
Characters that not from start of movie to end of movie are inconsistent, but from start of scene to end of scene, they can't stay a consistent, like, whole human being for 3 minutes at a time. My watch was like giving me the, your blood pressure is high or your pulse is high, like warning as I'm watching it. And so, because I have struggled all day, I have struggled with this, like, which of these two is worse, right?
Yeah.
And we have framed these just like Greg said, where we give a little more leeway to people who shouldn't, couldn't have known better, as opposed to those who should have known better.
Right.
But this one is so bad. It is so incredibly bad that I'm just not sure that if you blindfolded me and kidnapped me from my house, and when you rip the thing off, I'm sitting and tied to a chair and there's a movie screen up in front of me, I'm honestly not sure which one I'd less want to appear on that screen in front of me. But I honestly, and I didn't think it could be possible after watching Battlefield Earth, but I think I'd almost rather Battlefield Earth. At least I could just suffer in silence, as opposed to what the room did to me as a human. I'm never gonna be the same after watching. It changed something inside of me.
Show me on the doll where the room touched you.
It is insane. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll go back and watch The Disaster Artist at some point. I didn't get a chance to add that context to having watched the film this during this time frame. Like, I'm like wound up. It this shit is fucking wild, dude.
And it sucks. Like, it does.
And it shouldn't be able to have that type of control over. And I'm sure with time, I will not feel this as strongly about it. Yeah, but like, this is the movie that of all eight of the movies,
you got PTSD just from the room.
It fucking makes my brain crazy. Like,
well, it's like a make a, if it was make a wish, like if you lied to me and like, this is a make a wish thing, this guy's actually mentally retarded, I'd be like, oh, I'll watch it. You know, this is cool. It's, it's neat that this guy got to make a movie. But then when you find out he intentionally made it, he paid for it, he forced all these people to do it with him, it's like, you know, watching Kim Jong-un treat his people the way he does. I'm like, you're a piece of shit. Like, that's a terrible thing you did. And this movie is very North Korean to me. It's almost like an alien watched a, one crappy soap opera and was like, I can do that. And then, like, came to Earth and did it. And I was like,
dude, we said this, you could convince me, you could make a strong case that this was the very first attempt at generative AI creating a movie from scratch.
No, yeah, no, that's a perfect analogy.
Yeah. Because the characters are all 98% human and 2%. What the fuck was that?
What is this?
The thing is, the multitude of sex scenes within a 30-minute span defies any type of logic. They serve no purpose, really.
The overdubbing of sexual sounds on top of already cringy hell.
Yeah.
Like, that makes it 100 times crazier.
Right.
I mean, that sex scene, having how someone long? Like, 40 minutes of the damn film, it felt like.
Yeah, it just keeps going. And they have multiple, and they keep piling on.
And but, every time a new character gets introduced, I'm going, God, please don't let these people be having sex.
Yeah. No.
Don't show me these people in the nude. Like, it could have been fucking Cheryl Teagues walking in there, and I'd have been like, I don't want to see. I don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it. Yeah. I don't want to see it.
You've ruined sex for me for the rest of my life.
The unsexy.
More than my Uncle Lonnie did.
Oh my God.
The unsexy music to accompany it, like your Uncle Lonnie used to put on when he would come into your room. The jazzy singer and all that stuff.
Gently touch your head.
Yeah, just it's
not my head.
You're a good boy.
He told me if I ever told anybody that they would blame me. Oh no. Which I always found weird.
Oh, man.
They'd say it was my fault. The football playing. Now, Dr. K, I don't know if you know this, but I went to the Room website because I had a hard time finding it streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
And Greg eventually had to help me in that department. And so I went to the Room website thinking maybe I'd figure it out there. The website is equally as unhinged as the movie is.
Yeah.
But I will say the one thing that I find amazing about this whole thing is that apparently in this guy's complete lack of self-awareness, he is self-aware enough to sell commemorative The Room autographed footballs on The Room website.
Wow.
For a group of people who look like they had never even seen a football before, didn't know what it was for. Like,
oh yeah,
like you handed it to kids in Pakistan and said, "It's up to you. It's up to you to figure out what this is for. Do you fill it with water and drink out of it? Is it something that you play a game with? Is it a pillow? You know, they don't know. They've never seen one of these before, and neither had these guys."
I thought this was a very it happened a little too early on, but to me, this is like what being in Corey Feldman's head is like. Like, that is the Room is Corey Feldman.
Is Tommy actually Corey Feldman?
I think that's because, he's supposed to be Corey Feldman. That's who I think it is.
Have we ever seen Tommy Wiseau and Corey Feldman in the same room?
Have we ever? I don't know.
Could be.
But yeah, I know that we set a bar. We drew a line in the sand and we said, because the movies were so different in not just the movies themselves, but how they got made, why they got made. We had movies from the 50s, from the 60s, 90s, there had to be some way that you take these disparate items, eight different things, and you got to set some ground rules on how you're going to compare them. And one of the ones, and we keep going back to it, was if they gave you a bunch of money and you still fucked it up, like that's the greater sin here.
Right.
But terrible. For every rule, there has got to be something that disproves the rule. It's The Room, dude. Yeah. The Room is the craziest thing. The Room is Yoko Ono music albums. The Room is.
Yeah, those are bad.
Yeah.
He holding that dress on his crotch as he dies. I mean, everything is so. Stupid.
Yeah, there's no way to intuit what that means. Like you can usually find artistic expression and everything. This was devoid of artistic expression. There was zero artistic expression. The only thing I can say differentiates this between Battlefield Earth is Battlefield Earth ruined careers. This ruined no one's career. Like no one, they all sucked, and they from dust they came, to dust they returned. It was really just a waste of his money. Battlefield Earth was marketed, and it destroyed several people's careers. I mean, it John Travolta's hair fell out after this. Like, it was all downhill from there.
He had to do another Look Who's Talking movie.
I mean,
to get a little bit of money to pay for his plane.
Wild hogs happened to him.
And I think that The Room was the best thing that ever happened to Tommy Wiseau, because it was so bad that he ended up making money off of it.
And I know, but what I also don't like is that he can't embrace the sound. Like, I get the sense from everything I saw that he still thinks
that
people, like, unironically love the movie and love him.
Right.
And that he's not in on this joke. And like, and it's not a confusion in the language or culture or context. It can't be that.
Yep.
Like, you.
So while we're formulating an opinion, anybody in the audience who wants to put in a comment what they think is the worst of these two movies, we say when we do the good movies, I've said before, it's kind of like going to a fine dining restaurant. You get two plates of food. Which one would you rather eat again? You know, and in this case, we have to go the other route. So if I got a plate of dog shit and a plate of vomit put in front of me, at which one of these would I definitely stay away from? That I would, okay, if I got to eat one, I'm going to take, am I going to take the vomit in Battlefield Earth over the dog shit in The Room? And that's kind of where we're at with this. Because honestly, compared to the other two was kind of easier, because Mac and Me is not offensive in any way. It's just, it just sucks.
Yeah.
These two are kind of offensive, bad films. They're probably two of the most offensive bad films that I've ever seen. And I watch bad films for fun. I watch everything. You know, Matt, you've known me for a while. And
Eric,
we've gotten to know each other.
You give every movie a chance. I'm the same way.
Yeah. And these were offensive to me. It was pure pain like I've never experienced. And like Eric said, I don't know if I got PTSD where I got the shakes, but I didn't enjoy either of these films. And I know that I'll never watch them again. And that's a relief. Yeah. That's the one bright spot out of all of this. I will never watch these two again, but which one would I want to watch the least? So I started off the voting. I'm going to let Eric start it off for this one.
And I won't be just, you know, this isn't one of those, like when we did the best movies or when we did the sports movies, I think we got really invested in our choices and whatever. I mean, I could flip a coin. I can see both of these. I won't be disappointed either way, but I have to go on record and say that The Room is the worst thing I've ever seen or experienced in my whole life. Heaven forbid, maybe one of my children dying
could overtake
this. Maybe. It is literally the only thing I can think of.
He says maybe.
Where I would go.
Maybe. Would go, maybe.
Okay. The Room wasn't that bad. it's The Room for me. The Room is the worst thing. It's the worst thing.
You still said maybe one of your children died.
Yeah, I don't know which child. We didn't say which child.
Yeah, we did not. We did not say which child.
Love y'all, kids. You shouldn't be listening to this, but if you are.
Yes, yes. He does not have a favorite.
Okay, yeah, it's The Room.
All right. So, Matt, I'm going to kick it over to you. I'm going to reserve my judgment until you make an argument one way or the other.
I have to, only for my visceral hate of what that movie did, honestly, to so many careers. I have to go with Battlefield Earth. Ooh. Like, if I had to watch The Room again in a comical way, like my friends are like, I dare you to watch it and not punch a wall, I'm going to have to be high. That's for sure. And I'd have to have something helping me get through it. But Battlefield Earth was just so atrociously filmed. I'm a cinematography guy. Like, if your cinematography is good, you could make a movie about Hitler's butthole. And I would be like, oh, okay, there's something here. At least the cinematography is good. But Battlefield Earth had nothing good in it. Like 0.0. The special effects are crap.
Yeah.
It took great actors and made them look like crap. It was hyped out of control marketing-wise. It was marketed as like Avatar, and it just sucked. So I felt hurt by Battlefield Earth. The room was like, you know, watching two autistic people have sex. I was like, this is uncomfortable, but like, it's still sex. It's a movie, at least. It's terrible. Battlefield Earth was like watching my parents have sex. It was upsetting. It was upsetting. I'd never want to do it for a third time. So, it was
autistic
terrible.
People having sex versus your parents. That's
parents,
a pretty
right. two strangers.
Pretty, yeah, that's pretty, you know, distinctive.
Two strangers,
both awkward,
I can get,
but one more traumatic yeah. than the next.
Exactly. So jeez. I'm going to go Battlefield Earth 100%. Can't stand it. And not
hey,
a
Greg,
huge fan of
Greg, do the right thing here.
Well, you know what the
agree
thing is?
Agree with me, Greg.
A thing is I really don't know. I'm thinking over in my mind which one that really I wouldn't. If you said, held a gun to my head and said, you have to watch one again, you have to sit through, which one could I sit through? Jeez. That's a tough one.
It's like, which venereal disease do you want, Greg?
Exactly.
Which one's curable? That's the question. Which one's curable? Which one's a virus?
I'm going to be honest. I could watch, if I had to, if I absolutely had to, I could watch Battlefield Earth again for no other reason other than it's at least somewhat of a film. I don't want to watch either.
You have to stop talking because you'll talk yourself into the other one.
He's
like
happy. Right.
It's crazy.
Right. I'll go with the
no I feel the
through.
Same
yeah.
way.
Yeah, it is.
The
they're
more
both,
I
they're
say
both, they're both really 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 bad, and I struggle because I don't want to watch either of these again, but no. I think because of the sci-fi aspect that if you forced me to, I love sci-fi, so even though this is an offense to sci-fi everywhere, rather than just watching people in the same living room over and over again, that's the horrible, just disgusting sex scenes.
Worst porn ever.
Yeah, the green screen. I hate both of them with a passion, but I'll say The Room. So we'll give it to The Room as far as to get to
the
finals.
The Room sucks.
It does.
I'm not mad about that at all.
No offense, but yeah.
They both need to die.
Yeah.
I'd have been fine either way. And yeah, the more you talk about the one,
yeah,
the other one starts to fade out of your, you know, mind. But then the second you start talking about that one, it flips. And
it's a shitty movie paradox.
It's great. Dude.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's.
Yeah. It's an infinite loop of hate. For both,
you know, shitty movies all the way down.
I'll be honest with you, like watching The Disaster Artist, they have this whole thing kind of like with when we talked about Plan 9 where people would go and just love to go see it.
Yeah,
I don't see that with The Room. I would go see Plan 9 in a theater for fun. Yeah. I would not go see The Room in a theater for fun. So if you do that, great, more power to you. This thing is just it's so excruciating to deal with. Because it just it doesn't do anything. The I think Tommy Wiseau's delivery is one of the things that drives me insane the most. The laughing when it's inappropriate, the mispronunciation, the dialogue inflections that are all over the place.
Whatever that accent is, like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. So
yeah,
these are our final two then. So now we've got to decide with one last debate on which one is the worst of these bad movies that we've discussed in this bracket. So we've got Tiptoes.
You just made it easy for me.
The Tiptoes or The Room. I mean, I think our stronger side.
What are we doing to ourselves?
This is what it's like. Like when you're like, what would it be like? worshiping the Dark Lord. Or yeah. I'm going to join Slytherin and go to a house party. This is what it's like. You get there and it's just devoid of happiness.
Yeah. And like and what it's forcing us to do is to act like any of these are better than the other. Oh, and they're not.
Right.
Because they're all like equally as shitty in different ways, and it will affect you differently, and it will like I feel humiliated having watched all of these.
Yeah,
which is a fetish of mine, so it's half good and half bad. But it's like, you know, would you rather someone step on your balls or put a cigarette out on your balls? And you have to act like one of those is better.
Yeah,
they're both terrible.
Yeah,
equally bad. And so I don't know. I mean, I know The Room, as we've talked about last week and this week, is like actually insane, like actually purposefully or not, is insane. It is insane. And Tiptoes, as well intentioned, I guess, as it was meant to be, is also pretty unhinged.
Yeah.
We ended up with two of the movies that just make the least amount of sense.
Right.
Which I'm proud of us for. Just like Catwoman, okay. Yeah. And Manos,
this is legitimate Fade, research. Okay. This is a legitimate research, Eric. This is legitimate.
But this is like, of the eight, just
these two like, suck.
What the fuck? Like, what the fuck? Why the fuck? And what?
Why
the
do
fuck?
You exist?
Well, what's interesting is that as bad movies go, all of these films were kind of in the bracket, were kind of different from one another. You know, Catwoman was different than Battlefield Earth, but these two, the ones that got to the end, are both eerily similar in the fact that they're dramas that were supposed to take serious, but go out of their way to prevent us from taking them seriously. Right. One has got a little bit more better. I would say Tiptoes has got a better production value. It's got better actors. And so for me, it's more tolerable to watch, even though there's no plot. But so if you compare it to The Room, same thing. There's no plot, but then there's nothing redeeming.
Then think about it. This, like, I was talking to my best friend's birthday today. So I called him earlier. We're just chit chatting. And I think about, like, if I found out that my very best friend, Josh, had never seen either one of these movies.
Yeah.
Like, which one would I say, oh, dude, this is terrible. You have got to watch this. Even watch it with me, you know, and let's like laugh, but also suffer through this together. I honestly don't know the answer to that, like, because I can't imagine inviting my buddy over, having a couple of Shiner Box, and pulling up Tiptoes, because I think he'd be mad at me for like making him watch that.
Yeah, exactly. What's wrong? But with
on
us?
The other hand, if I pull The Room up, and it's probably a little more geared towards doing something like that where you go, this is insane, and maybe you won't have the same like to your core negative reaction to it like I did, but I know you're gonna hate it, but let's just like,
it's like have Rickrolling fun people.
So that's a good point. I mean, when you're choosing between Battlefield Earth and The Room, it's because both of them are not very redeeming to watch. Terrible. But when you're comparing it to Tiptoes, it's a different level. And the thing that you said there that I think is important is, if you're going to show it to somebody else, and you have to watch it with them, that's key. have to watch it.
Yeah.
I think Tiptoes is insufferable because not only the dwarf thing and the constant just insensitivity, just the bad acting from Peter Dinklage, the horrible looks of Gary Oldman, it's just boring. Right. It's just a hard sit through, because as you're watching it, there's like when, you know, Gary Oldman's girlfriend's cheating on him, there's nothing interesting about it. Everything is just, you just shake your head and go, why am I watching this? And if I didn't have to watch it for this podcast, I probably wouldn't watch more than 30 minutes like with Battlefield Earth. But at least with The Room, I guess you could have some sort of novelty and say, you got to see how shitty this movie really is. You got to experience.
You're not going to believe this.
Yeah. So let's do this. Matt, I will give you the last word on these two films, and I will let you kick off with your vote, and we'll go the opposite way around, and I'll let Eric be the decider on this one.
So I'm different than you.
Yeah.
If I'm different. So I have a different take on this. I think of it, instead of watching with a friend, is if my parents, someone I trusted that, you know, had a high, I don't know, tolerance for my BS or loved me so much they wouldn't want to see terrible things happen to me, if they walked in and saw me watching one of those films, I think the room, they would be the most disappointed. Like, what the, what are you doing? Like, with your life? Like, I think if I were watching bestiality, like, you know, something like that, they'd be like, that's weird. But he's into hunting, so maybe that's the thing. But if I was seen watching The Room, I think my credit score would go down, like, in addition to my parents hating me. But I think if Matthew McConaughey was on the screen, it, out of context, you could be like, oh, it's one of those rom-coms. So I think just if seeing The Room, because it is so famously terrible, hurts my credibility. And I think because Tiptoes is almost forgotten about, like, Hollywood literally acts like it doesn't exist. No one's making a biopic about it. I mean, besides people razzing Matthew McConaughey or Peter Dinklage, it's almost just disappeared. So I'm actually going to pick The Room as the worst for it being the most notably the worst.
Yeah.
For it sucking famously. I think it wins by losing. So that's why it sucks for me. And I think that's why it's the most terrible. And I think that sex scene, it does not redeem it. I think if it was a good sex scene.
Which one?
Right. Well, I mean, the one that's 4 hours long. That one, if it had been, you know,
with the waterfall inside of the mirror, like Joey has right. from Friends. Yeah. That's
and then ridiculous. It being like the, you know, the set of, wherever they filmed that in, like somebody's basement. It was probably the Golden Girls set. They just redressed it up, but it was terrible. So I've got to say The Room for me of all time is the movie that I could not bear someone loving me walking in and seeing me watching just because I'd be like, I quit. I'm out.
Yeah. What are you doing to yourself? Yeah. It's like if they caught you masturbating, they'd be, you know, that type of
option. Now, if you were masturbating to eat in one of those movies, it would be more unacceptable to masturbate to The Room as well. So I'm also going
to
say The Room.
It'd be pretty unacceptable to be masturbating to Peter.
I'd rather be caught masturbating than caught watching one of these movies, for sure.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah,
but if you were going to have a combo situation, I mean, you know, it depends on what's on the screen, I guess, for Tiptoes. But, you know,
for me, it's Mac and me. I got to masturbate to Mac and me. But it's just a little,
out of these, it's either Catwoman or the wife in Mano's Hands of Fate.
Yeah, she's
a fucking fox, dude. Yeah,
she was pretty hot.
I mean, listen, we have hemmed.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Greg.
Well, I could let you go next if you want.
Go ahead.
I'm going to repeat your words, what you said earlier, but I'm going to take it a different way. Like you were saying about what you would. You know, if you had to show something to somebody else, you would show probably, you know, that you would have to sit down with them. So you kind of find The Room more redeeming because that's what you would kind of exhibit. And I think that's why the Room is the worst of these two, just because it's like a train wreck that you can't look away from. That I would show people the Tiptoes trailer maybe just to give them an idea of it. But I would not. The Tiptoes trailer is enough, I think, to go, look at this piece of crap. But to actually sit through that movie.
Just the idea that movie got made is enough for you to go.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How weird.
But if I was wanting to sit through The Room just because of Wiseau's acting and everything else that is just so atrocious, it is one of those movies that has to be seen to be believed. So I will go with Matt, and I'll say The Room is probably my vote for. What would you have voted for, Eric? Would you have voted for Tiptoes?
I mean, I have looked at this every angle that it can be looked at, hemmed and hawed, and, you know, do my best to be one of those even, you know, give everything equal weight.
Yeah.
Like, it's overthinking it. The Room is the worst movie that's ever been made. It is offensive in every way, and it doesn't even gain the benefit of being a bad movie with charm, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, or a bad movie that is kind of a funny cult classic, like Dude, Where's My Car?
Right.
A bad movie that has some fun superhero stuff, like Catwoman. There's nothing. Nothing redeems this movie from the sheer insanity of its badness.
Right.
It's bad and it's insane that as bad as you could imagine it being, it's worse than that. And I think that is the whole thing, is that you couldn't possibly prepare yourself for what that was. This movie, The Room, is the reason we have this matchup.
Yeah.
And so somehow I knew the reputation that it had.
Yeah.
But that is not enough. As you sit down and as it starts, and that realization starts to sink in that, like, it's a dark cloud that just comes and it hovers over you
right.
for as long as you're watching this thing.
Yeah, it's true.
You can't feel normal.
No.
I didn't eat for days. Like, it's crazy. It's The Room. I mean, it's The Room. You guys both had really excellent points on why it's The Room. And I think we all agree that it's bad, but have different reasons why for us personally it's so bad.
Right. Yes.
But dude, it's just bad. And every new person who has the misfortune of seeing it for the first time will have some different reason why it's the worst movie they've ever seen. It's the only thing that can unite us in a world that is so divided.
I'm telling you, it is the one thing we can all hate.
It's
crazy. And I think what cemented it for me was if you chop that movie and tiptoes into 30-second segments, rather, and then you took that evenly and dispersed it among strangers, like crowdsourced it. There are parts of Tiptoes someone might be like, that's not so bad. There's not a single 30 seconds in this entire film that someone could see out of context and be like, I could see this being a good film. It just doesn't exist. There's no 30-second point anywhere in the film that doesn't suck.
That's so true.
You know what I mean? So if you chop it up and dissect it scientifically, this movie sucks purely.
What a good drinking game. I mean, you'd end up dying of alcohol poisoning, but you are forced to find 30 seconds of film that tells one cohesive part of this story. It can't be done. It literally cannot be done.
It isn't. It's a horrible film. I think if we do this category again, and I think we will, we'll find another 8 really bad movies to subject ourselves to. It'll be interesting to see if we can ever top this one. I don't know if we can. I don't know if it can be done. I've seen some bad films out there, but at least they're redeeming in some way or another where they're so bad they're funny. This one is just flat out very difficult to watch. So
I felt bad for me watching it. I felt even worse for you, Greg, because I'm just a dickhead who doesn't know anything about movies. This is the second movie podcast I've been on because I don't watch movies. I don't know shit about movies. I haven't seen most movies. Sure, it gives a interesting take as a late 40-year-old man watching these movies for the first time, and I don't have the emotional attachment of having seen them informative parts of my life, but like, you care about this stuff. This stuff's important to you. This stuff like is a foundational interest in your life.
Yeah, for sure.
From the stories you told about your dad growing up to getting an advanced degree in this, even though it's not really what your line of work is in real life.
Yep.
So like, I felt bad, but I can't thank you enough for indulging me.
It's all good.
And, the real treasure is the friends we made along the way and the journey of, watching the movie was terrible, but talking about the movies was really enjoyable. And I always looked forward to this part of it, which was, like we said, the trauma bonding.
Oh, for sure.
What part did you find the shittiest?
So that being said, we've declared The Room the worst movie. We'll probably do another bad movie category down the road, but we want to preview before we go what our next category is going to be. We haven't put it out there to the audience, but Eric and I have been texting back and forth about what we could do next. And Eric texted me after David Lynch passed away and said, "Do you think we should do David Lynch movies?" And I asked her, I said, have you ever watched any David Lynch movies?
Not a single minute.
Oh, dang. Don't tell him anything.
And I said, oh, they're going to break your brain. They are going to break your brain. So yeah. For the audience who's never seen a David Lynch film or seen some of these on the list, we're about to count down the top eight that we're going to do. Just enjoy. We'll try to help you along the way. If you want, we'll announce what we're going to do ahead of time before we cover them. And then you can kind of watch them along with us at home. Enjoy your brain being broken. And if you don't understand the movies, we'll try to help you explain it. I'm really looking forward to seeing Eric trying to make heads or tails of some of these.
This is what I'm nervous about, because films. I'm so fucking dumb in real life.
Yes.
And then I'm so fucking dumb when it comes to movies.
So it'll be an experience.
I'm not sure I'm the right person for this.
So let's go through the top eight that we're going to cover real quick, and then we will announce our next episode and what the two that we're going to cover are. So let's take a look. We're starting out with our number eight seed. Great film. Wild at Heart with Laura Dern and Nicolas Cage. There's Nicolas Cage again. This is actually a pretty good film. So that's our number eight seed. I seeded these by their IMDb rating, nothing else. So number seven is Eraserhead, a very bizarre, surrealist film. It's probably the oldest one on the list, and it is going to mess with you. It's going to mess with you, Eric. You're going to have fun with this.
Quit editorializing, Greg.
Number six is Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me. If you want to watch Twin Peaks before it's not mandatory, but it's only six episodes. So if you want to watch it beforehand, you could do that and then watch the movie. We'll get to that one down the line. Number five is Lost Highway, Bill Pullman, Patricia Arquette back in there again. Very similar kind of to Wild at Heart, but a good film in its own right. It will mess with your head. Number four is Blue Velvet with Dennis Hopper, Kyle MacLachlan, and I think it's Isabella Rossellini, and a great, great performance.
Is this the one where one of them has a penis the whole time?
No, I think you're thinking of The Crying Game. That's not David Lynch film, but that's okay.
Never mind.
You can imagine a penis if you want to imagine.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm disappointed, but I'll manage.
Number three is Mulholland Drive. It's probably one of my favorites on this list. I really enjoy Mulholland Drive, but it is a mind bender. Probably one of the biggest mind benders on this list, and considered one of his best films. And there's still two that are considered better than this on IMDb. And number two is The Straight Story, which is the only one that really isn't a mind bender. It's a Disney film of all things, but
Disney
phenomenal film. And it's hard to believe that David Lynch even did this. This will probably be Eric's favorite because it's the most straightforward.
Yeah. You don't have to think surreal. About anything.
You could just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And number one is a classic. I'm a human being. That is the elephant. I'm not making fun of him. I'm just imitating the way he says it.
That's actually a pretty good impression.
Thank you.
It's the story of John Merrick.
John Merrick, the Elephant Man. It is a fantastic film. So that one, again, is not as surrealistic. It's kind of straightforward. Definitely a classic. So those are the eight we chose. Now, Cripley has put in there Dune and Blue Velvet. Dune was considered, but the two-hour version of Dune is a freaking mess. It is a mess of a film.
Greg will not stand for it.
I will not. You have to watch the three-hour version at least. I don't know if I want to put Eric through that. And it was the lowest rated on IMDb, so it just missed the cut. I went with Wild at Heart instead.
But doesn't it seem like that movie is at least one I might either A, enjoy, or B, have the capacity to
We can throw it in there as a bonus.
I don't know.
We can throw it in there as a bonus.
What do you do with nine movies?
We just give one a bye.
It's like it's like 9 minute abs. You know, that doesn't make any sense.
You can watch Dune on your own and let me know how you feel about it. I like David Lynch's version of Dune. But you have to watch the 3 hour version, the 3 hour plus version. The 2 hour version is garbage.
There's not enough context. You get so confused. No. You get lost in the 2 hour version.
And if you've never read the book, it's even worse. So the next episode we're doing is going to be the 18th of February in 2 weeks from tonight. We're going to do our first David Lynch versus David Lynch battle. And that will be Blue Velvet versus Lost Highway, the fourth seed and the fifth seed. So tune in next Tuesday, 2 weeks from now, 18th of February, for our start of our David Lynch battle. I think this one will give us a little bit more, like we did the world's worst movies. This will give us a little bit of culture. It'll bring it'll That's cleanse right. the palate of all of this crap that we've been eating for the last several weeks and kind of enjoy that. So before we go, I want to say thanks to Matt for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you being here. Thanks again. One other thing is it's Super Bowl weekend. So how'd that get in there?
How did that get in there?
Of course,
I didn't even know the Eagles were in the Super Bowl. That's weird.
So I can't stop the show without saying go Birds. Hopefully
watching.
We'll see what happens.
The Eagles play the Commanders as a Dallas Cowboys fan was like trying to choose between rooting for Al Qaeda and the Taliban. It was just like, fuck both of these guys.
Yeah.
Go Chiefs.
Hey. You want the same old Chiefs in there every year? Or you want something new? For crying out loud!
Are you guys going to share your picks? Are you going to share your picks?
It's not that.
Yeah, I know who you're picking.
It's not that I want Philadelphia players or the organization to lose. It's that I don't want their fans to be happy
to win. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I have the hardest.
I'm
time
I'm one of their fans. You don't want me to be happy?
You are the only one, but it doesn't quite even everything.
Eric, just imagine this. Someday we're going to do the Battle of the Worst Movies. There's going to be a biopic made about Jerry Jones someday, and we'll both vote it for the reason that he's a terrible human being. It'll
be just like The Room.
Jerry Jones.
You're tearing me apart, Romo. Tearing me apart, Romo.
I can't wait to see the cameo from Luka Doncic in there. Nico.
That'll be good.
Nico Harrison. All right. Well,
we appreciate
Greg, excellent job as always. You do such a great job of facilitating all of this. For those of you who don't know, Greg does all of the work. I just show up and look handsome as hell. And that's really it. So, Greg, thank you. Appreciate all the work that you do making this
my
happen.
My pleasure. Again, thanks to Matt.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. We'll have to have you back on again sometime. Thanks to everybody who joined the live stream. Again, Tuesday, 18 February is our next battle, the first start of our first round of David Lynch. So, again, if you don't know, please subscribe at our YouTube channel or our Twitch channel. It's on the screen that you saw as it comes up. So, again, we'll see you next time on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. Have a great night, everybody.